And before I say anything, I have a disclaimer. But this applies, as far as I know, to all attempts to work with the Jacobian explicitly. Okay? So if C is a curve over K, which is a finite field, perfect field, it doesn't have to be perfect, that's just to simplify some things. As far as I know, no one has really worked much with Jacobians, at least for large genus curves, in the full sense of the word. What people really do was you work with the subgroup of the Jacobian over K of the advisor classes which actually have a K rational divisor representing them.
That actually is big zero of C over K.
Right, so you can think of it as big zero of C over K. If you, of course, it's the same thing as the K rational points of the Jacobian provided, that either C has a K rational point, or for instance, if you have a finite field and there's no Brouwer group obstruction, that's also fine. But as far as I know, all the existing algorithms basically work with this. Okay? Unless you're particularly brave and you try to write down equations for the Jacobian. Okay?
And for the addition.
Sorry?
And for the addition.
And for the addition. Absolutely right. By the way, I'm going to mostly be concerned with large genus. And I want to say, if G is large, how many arithmetic operations in K are needed to e.g. add 2 points in JK, or rather in the big zero subgroup. Okay, now this is not really a measure of how long it takes, because especially over something like a number field, the heights of the points are increasing as you add further and further, so you'll get numbers with more and more digits in the numerators and denominators. But still, this is probably the best measure I can use right now. Okay, so my first observation is that it's useless to write down equations for G. Maybe not useless.
J.
It's
J.
For, oops. Yes, they look alike, don't they? No. It's useless to write equations for J. Or rather, it's hopeless. That's a better way to say it. Because you need at least 3 to the G variables. At least, and then writing down the equations for addition are even worse, as you know.
Okay.
If you take 3 times the theta divisor, say, I mean, how else are you going to really? This is if you want equations.
You could perhaps use a singular model.
Okay, you could write something that, in that case, you would want to essentially try writing down, let's say, equations for the symmetric G product. I don't think you will be much happier with that.
No, it will still be helpful, of course.
Yeah,
it
will.
It's less helpful.
Yeah. But in any case.
You need 3 times the theta divisor to be defined over K for this, so I mean, generally,
yes.
Inverse than this.
Okay, let's just assume that there's a rational point and we'll get it all out of the way right now before any more problems arise. Okay, so as far as I know, there are 2 ways you can actually try to represent the Jacobian. So most work that is done in practice and most previous work is what you might call arithmetic, this doesn't mean that we work with J over a number field, but that we take a map from C to P1, and let's say n is the degree of pi, and you say you study QFC, which is a degree n extension of k bracket x, and then essentially you're working with this as though it were this function field, using the techniques you know from arithmetic number theory and ideal classes and so forth. So I'm not going to really go into this because this is sort of fairly standard, but I maybe might as well mention how fast it takes to do these. Okay. If you take curves, a family of curves where the projection to P1 has bounded degree, so you have bounded gonality. Let's say you just took hyperelliptic curves or trigonal curves, but you never went to high gonality curves. Then it takes order of g squared k operations to do a group operation in J of k. So this is, you know, starting with Cantor and going up to algorithm Florian Hess, say. But these types of curves are very special. A general curve of genus G, the smallest n is something like G over 2. Okay? And in that case, you need order G to the 4 complexity to implement addition in the group. And it's needless to say, all these methods, you know, you really have to have a pretty good implementation where you're working with polynomials and lattices in k bracket x to the n, and you have to worry about, well, the inverse image of infinity. If there's just one point, it's comparatively easy, but if you have a more complicated divisor with the pullback of infinity, you have to work somewhat harder. So all of this is fairly elaborate. It's beautiful, but it's elaborate. Okay? So I want to tell you about a slightly different way to approach these, which is geometric way. Okay, so these newer methods, which are geometric. Now, my methods are not the first geometric methods. There were geometric ones a while ago, but they were fairly elaborate also. But these are very simple geometric methods. The idea is that you take an embedding of C into a big projective space. Here, I should mention that n is the degree of a line bundle L, and n is order of G, let's say something like 6G. It's not a small multiple of G, but it's not, you know, too enormous either. You could probably bring it down to 3G, but let's stick with this. And the embedding is given, of course, by the full linear series of L. The previous geometric methods tried to, say, embed C as a singular plane model, or at least in small dimension. But then you had problems resulting from this. This is actually much nicer. Okay. For one thing, once n is about this large, you know that C is described by quadrics. And in fact, you don't even have to ever write down the quadrics. The input to my algorithms is entirely like this. You have V, which is H0 of CL. This is, if you like, linear functions on P to the n minus G. And that's, say, V prime is H0 of C L tensor 2. Notice this is H0 of C, so if you like, you can write it as OC of 2. So it's quadratic functions on C, not on P to n minus G. And these both have dimension O of G. So I never need to write down the O of G squared quadratic polynomials in the coordinates. I just need to know these two vector spaces. And I need to know mu, which is the multiplication map, from V tensor V to V prime. Okay? So these are the input, this is the form in which I'm assuming I know my curve, in which to do these geometric algorithms. And in light of this form, then the complexity of Jacobian group operations. So practically it goes down to order of g to the 3. Well, that's a small y. I need 3 plus epsilon if it's a finite field. Okay, and theoretically, you just need order of g to the omega, where omega is what you might call the asymptotic complexity of linear algebra. We know that omega is around less than around 2.376 at the moment. Right? So, you know, just like you can do fast Fourier transforms to do arithmetic faster than you expected, there are pretty wild ways to do linear algebra faster than you expected. And if you use those, which I don't think you would practically want to do, at least you have a theoretical reduction of the complexity to something like pretty close to g squared, really, g to the 2.4, let's say.
There's no sparsity, I presume.
No sparsity is assumed. In fact, the matrices are generally pretty dense.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about doing things like, you know, black box algorithms to see if you could somehow. There are some tricks one could do, but I don't really, it's not really worth thinking about right now, because as you'll see, I would rather keep the exposition simple and not go into sort of wilder things one can do. Okay, and I want to emphasize the algorithms use only linear algebra on subspaces of V and V prime and the multiplication map. Oops. And maybe one more thing, where can you actually find curves described this way in nature, modular curves? You can, for instance, for a modular curve, if C is a modular curve, you can take V to be a space of modular forms, let's say of weight 6, I guess, to pretty much get this. And then multiplying them together, you get a modular form of weight 12. And knowing how to do that is just enough to be able to describe reasonably well elements of the Jacobian of a modular curve, for example. But I would like to argue that even any curve of large genus, unless it is special, you know, and has a small degree map here, it's probably better to think of it from this point of view. Okay? So this is, you know, the general overview of the results, and I thought I would talk a little bit about how one can represent divisors on the curve, because even just representing divisors is something that would probably be of interest to the other algorithms that we've been hearing about in this workshop. Okay? And how you can represent and work with divisors in and of itself, these approaches are interesting. Okay, so let's start talking about, first of all, how do you represent a k-rational effective divisor D. For some reasons of convenience later on, I'll put slightly more stronger conditions than I actually need. So I need 2g less than or equal to the degree of d less than or equal to 4g. Remember, n is 6g. I really need here n minus 2g, to be honest.
If you bring n down to 3g, then you have a problem here.
Yes, well, but in that case, I can, with a lot more work, you can do g and n minus g. However, what's the problem there? Then it's not enough just to have multiplication up to degree 2, you'd have to have more multiplications. That's why I'd rather keep it with this and only do multiplication up to degree 2. If you bring it down to about g, pretty much all of this will still work, but you'll have to deal with some higher degree multiplication, which would be maybe faster to implement, but I don't want to get into it in a 30-minute talk either.
Okay.
So I emphasize the individual points of the, of course, do not have to be defined over K, just the device itself. Okay? So I can define two subspaces, WD in V and W prime D in V prime. Well, they're pretty much the obvious things. WD is the linear functions which vanish at D. And W prime D is the same, but of course with quadratic functions vanishing at D. And of course D can have multiplicity, and all of this is pretty simple to work with. And these are k-rational subspaces, and you can write them down, you can work with them just directly in terms of writing a basis for them in terms of a previously known basis for V. I mean, I'm assuming you know a basis for V and for V prime, and you know a multiplication table, which is all the sort of pre-computation you need. Okay, so these are already, let me maybe make a side philosophical comment. It's nice to work with the subspaces via bases, but on some level, what's happening here, we're philosophically saying, I'm describing divisors, let's say I fix the degree of D. So let's say D is just, degree D is, let's say, little d. This is a subspace of V with codimension D in either case. Okay, you've imposed D vanishing conditions, and more or less, you're thinking of describing divisors by an element of the Grassmannian parametrizing subspaces. I mean, this is, if you like, the quote scheme by hand. But you would never want to write down equations for the quote scheme as a projective variety. You would want to sort of work in the Grassmannian with subspaces and bases, and you would never really want to take the Flücker embedding and have enormously many enormously large dimensional spaces in the wedge product. That's just really not worth it. Okay, so I would like to make a plug for trying to stay on the level of the subspaces and the linear algebra. Okay, so let me maybe describe the easiest way to do some operations in the Jacobian. So here, yes?
How hard is it to go back and forth between a D given as a sum of points on the curve and a subspace in each direction?
All I'll say is it's polynomial time, but I also would like to make a manifesto that you would really much prefer to work with it this way.
But for some problems, you need to...
Yes, no, I quite understand. You would need to have some nice way of doing, if you like, effective Riemann-Roch. Now, these algorithms can be adapted for that. That's the end of my first paper. Mm-hmm. But of course, previously existing algorithms do that also.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sounds good?
Yep.
But I would like to say that almost everything I needed to do, which involved an actual point, I could do nicely enough without ever having to deal with the coordinates of the point, but just to deal with these subspaces.
Right.
It turned out to be somehow a much cleaner conceptual point of view.
That's a new problem.
Let's see, where was I? So let me describe the simplest way you can do Jacobian operations. I'm going to describe something that's like the Weierstrass model for elliptic curves. Okay? So here's a... generalization of the Weierstrass model. So here we can take... So D0 of degree 2G is a fixed k-rational divisor, okay, and it's sort of the origin for the Jacobian, and we're going to, I should maybe always say they're effective, unless I say otherwise, every single divisor is effective, okay, and of course if I have the D, of degree 2g, then there's the class d minus d0, maybe I'll do it x sub d in the Jacobian. Okay, and so I'm going to represent an element of the Jacobian by a divisor like this, You're already going to complain that this degree is too large and it's not unique, but don't worry, that's not a problem at all. That actually makes your life easier. Okay, and so let's say I have xd and xe, and I want to find, I must find an xf, so another divisor f, such that xf equals minus xd plus xe. So this is what you might call add flip. If you can do this, you can do inversion and you can do addition on the Jacobian. And of course you can do more specialized algorithms for everything, but I just want to get a flavor of the main idea. Okay, so basically the goal given WD and WE, which are again linear functions which vanish, the spaces of linear functions vanishing at D and E, I want to find WF such that D plus E plus F is in the linear equivalence class of 3D0. So let's think, how would we do something like this? Okay? And I emphasize it's AWF. That's not a big deal. So how can I get divisors on the curve which are equivalent to 3D0? Well, remember, the line bundle is L of 3D0. So all I need to do is to find it as the divisor of an element f for some suitable element of V, for some suitable linear function, so a hyperplane will vanish at D plus E plus F, and then if I can do that, and I can maybe use this to find F. Okay, so my first choice is, how do I find F? So I can take any f in WD plus E. Now, I know how to compute this in general, but so here let's just make a simplifying assumption. This is not needed for the algorithms. I just want D and E to have no common intersection. In that case, how do you find functions which vanish both at D and E? You would just take an intersection. Okay, so this is no problem. But in general, even if there are common points, you can do something pretty straightforward. Okay, it's a bit like taking tangent lines in the Weierstrass model as opposed to taking lines, secant lines. Okay, so we know that f vanishes at d plus e plus some f. And now my goal is, how do I find linear functions which vanish at f? Okay? Well, I need to somewhere use this multiplication, and I need to think a bit about quadratic functions. So what I need to do is a kind of a multiplication and then a division. Okay, the first multiplication I do is, I would like to find all quadratic functions that vanish at d plus e plus f. So how can I do that? So step one, find the space of quadratic functions vanishing at d plus e plus f. This is the product of f with all the linear functions. So again, this is all linear functions. This is the unique linear function vanishing at d plus e plus f. Their product, let's just write this as f times v. That's probably easier for notation. The product of this, you multiply f by each element of a basis for v, you get a basis for the space of quadratic functions vanishing at d plus e plus f. Okay? So that's my first trick. And then my second trick is, now how would I get a linear function? Remember, all I want to find is wf. How would I find linear functions vanishing at f? Well, they have the property that if you take a linear function vanishing at f, and you multiply it by a linear function vanishing at d plus e, where do you land? Exactly in this space. So what you need to do is, you need to notice that Wf is the S in V, so the linear functions, such that for all t in W d plus e, this space we know, S times t, right, that's mu of S tensor t, sits inside F times t. So in other words, you multiply S by any element which vanishes at d and e, and then you'll get something which vanishes also at this extra point f, the extra points f, sorry, and that more or less gives you what you want. For this, it's important that this this line bundle is base point free, but all the numbers I plugged in ensure that fact, so that's not a problem. And this is basically the crucial linear algebra step. What do I need to do this linear algebra step? Well, it seems nasty because I have to do this for all elements of WD plus E, but of course you only need to do this for all T in a basis for WT plus E. But if you do this, this has order of G elements, and working through this would take time order of G to the 4, using, let's say, Gaussian elimination. So I don't want to do this. I want to introduce one last but a very important idea, which is the idea of, for all t, let's say, I'm going to do it just for t1 and t2 in wd plus e, whose common locus of vanishing cuts out exactly d plus e. So in other words, in what we're trying to say is that the pencil of this linear series here has base points exactly at d plus e. That's I'm going to call it an ideal generating set, just so I don't have to repeat this too many times. I want to say a few things about ideal generating sets. But once you, if you can find ideal generating sets, then you, then once I know an IGS, it takes time order of g to the 3, or more accurately, order of g to the omega. Okay? Because I now only have, so to speak, two equations to satisfy that S times t1 and S times t2 are in the subspace, instead of having g equations for S. And each g equations for S, it's really g squared equations for scalars. So, okay. So this is somehow the last point I want to talk about, very briefly. I can prove the following things. First of all, if you have an infinite field, you always know there's an ideal generating set. But if you have a finite field, you can't always do an IGS of two elements. You need kind of log g elements. So that's why it becomes 3 plus epsilon instead of 3. But let's just stick with infinite fields because that's our main focus today. So how would I find an ideal generating set with two elements? Well, the basic idea is that you choose two elements at random, and I can quantify exactly how random it should be. Okay, and then I can guarantee that you will have an IGS with any prescribed probability you want. So we can find the IGS T1, T2 by basically a random choice in WD plus E. Okay, and it has a known guaranteed probability of success, let's say greater than 1 minus epsilon, and you choose the epsilon, sorry, 1 minus eta, you choose the eta in advance. I don't care, as long as you tell me before I start the computation. Okay? And not only that, I can check deterministically whether my random choice is an IGS. So it's not what you call a Monte Carlo algorithm where it could be wrong but you don't know. It's a Las Vegas algorithm where if you have a problem, you'll know it immediately, and if you really succeeded, you'll know it. And so this is a pretty reasonable outcome for everything.
Could you just take random choices and then compute until your, what you get in the end has the right size?
It more or less boils down to this. Let me just say that in this particular case, T1 and T2 are an ideal generating set if and only if T1 times V plus T2 times V equals, which should equal, I guess, W prime D plus E, has the correct dimension. Okay, so basically we're taking two functions whose only common zeros are at D plus E, multiply them by linear terms, you get quadratic things which vanish at D plus E and hopefully nowhere else, and basically the degrees and dimensions are all set up so that you get exactly this if it's an IGS, and you get less than it if you had extra base points by accident.
So then you would select another random thing.
So you select another random one, but it's sort of an exponential tail in the distribution, as is often the case with these. So it's a randomized algorithm, but in practice I don't think it's a big problem. I mean, maybe there's one last thing I should say. There's one extra idea which is worth mentioning, which is that you don't need to store V and V prime by a basis. You can store them, well, in a sort of basis, but in an unexpected way. You don't really need to store a multiplication table. And this is one other idea which also would be, I think, useful in a wider context. That's why I'm mentioning it. Instead of storing sections of L or of L's tensor by just having an abstract basis for the vector space, what you can sort of do is this. So morally speaking, so how would I talk about H0 of O of 3D0 and H0 of O of 6D0? So this is, remember, V, this is V prime. How could I represent elements of here so that multiplication is very easy and I can easily see what I get here? Well, if I take an element S or S prime, I replace it by S of P1 until S of P, I don't know, something like 6D plus 1 points. Enough points, so think of this as a meromorphic function with poles here. You pick some points elsewhere. You just store the values of these points. That's all you really have to do. And you multiply them together, and with this, you actually get the speed up to g to the omega. Otherwise, you really need g cubed just to write down the multiplication table and to look at it each time you do an operation. Okay? And these don't have to be points over k. It could be, so to speak, a point over an extension with its Galois conjugates, and then you're working in the algebra. So, but then you can still do that fast enough asymptotically. Okay, that wraps it up. Thank you.
Any other questions?
What is implemented?
What is implemented? not this version, but the version with a multiplication table. It took something like, I think, 300 lines of Perry code.
Is it available easily from your website or something?
No, I can send it to you. It's sort of more a prototype implementation.
Yeah.
It's not industrial or anything.
Well, it's just for playing around with.
Yeah, but it's sort of, the implementation is very simple. You only need to do some linear algebra and some, you know, bookkeeping. You don't need to do polynomial arithmetic. You don't need to do lattices in function fields. I mean, it's all more or less completely straightforward. So that's what's nice about it. It was extremely easy to theorize about and to prove correctness and asymptotics for the algorithm, which is not always the case, you know. Yeah.
So how do you recognize equality?
Ah, yes, you're right. I should have said two things. I can, of course, recognize equality, which is to say, when do WD and WE, for instance, come from the same class in the Jacobian? I'll do that in a minute. I also would like to mention that I can also recognize, and this is very important, if you have a subspace, W, is it a WD at all? Okay? Basically, all of those are sort of similar to this. You want to check that Some combination of this has the right rank after a few linear algebra operations. So do you want me to go through the details? But the basic idea is, it's not really so hard. Basically, you do this. You have WD and WE, okay? And are they in the same class? Okay? So here first, I take an S in WE, non-zero, I guess. So what does S vanish at? Maybe E plus E prime. So this has degree, 2G, this has degree 4G. And then sort of by a process similar to what I did here, I take S times V and divide by WE. So S times V, if you like, divided by WE is WE prime. That's pretty much. So linear functions times vanishing at E plus E prime gives you quadratic functions vanishing at E plus E prime. Divide by this sort of linear algebra, by functions vanishing at E, you get functions vanishing at E prime. And then what you want to do is you want to find WD plus E prime. Okay? And you check, is it not equal to zero? If it's not equal to zero, I mean, this is also done by some multiplications, but I don't want to get into it if they're not disjoint. Okay, then what does T have? T vanishes at D plus E prime, but of course, because it's a section of the linear things, it's in the equivalence class of 3D0, which is the same as equivalence class of E plus E prime, and that would prove to you that D and E are linearly equivalent. And of course, if this thing is zero, it forces you to realize that there is no section. So it's actually really very straightforward to talk about the ideas. But if you want to, make it a bit faster, you have to do some extra tricks. I didn't do that in my prototype, but I didn't feel the need just to try it out the first time.
So any other questions? Okay, so let's thank the speaker again. And the next talk will be at 5:30, in about 7 minutes.
Is it in this room or in the other room?
So there's graphical things from the number fields. So Sebastian Pauly's behind it also. The thing I told you about the monster, giant graphical. So Sebastian Pauly says it's probably going to be released under a BSD license eventually. But it uses cache.
Plain as perfect content. Sebastian Pauly?
Pauly.
Pauly.
Well,
that's something I have to think about.
Both names wrong. Yeah, that's a big thing.
He's been down in Sydney a lot.
You could do, which is just the same as what you could do in the other cases, is to extend your field by a little bit.
Well, I mean,
so maybe that would help there, but that you only really get a hand on the K-rational advisors, and then you can
I'm the other participant.
You can tell if two of them are in the same class or not.
That's because I had to remind them about you.
Makes a lot of things
I think Michael forgot about you. I had to remind him.
More or less,
is in fact a particular.
So you give me a form?
Yep.
For, okay.
For this,
I'm leaving Friday.
If you insist on reducing, if you insist on somehow finding a
single
settlement for every class, I mean, which would be...
Yeah, the guy who's wearing this name is Anish.
After the second talk, maybe the picture.
He has pictures. I hope they're not of him.
It's not...
Yeah, because
work
with
things that would otherwise be nasty,
looks like
they're just with nasty food.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
By just working with representatives...
Oh, that office view looks very familiar. That's the visitor office.
Yeah, this is 6:30
on the day. You work with the basis for a substance instead of working with the current buildings. But also,
I think that's great. I think that's a good thing to do.
You choose, you know...
Look up Anish.
I guess I put these forms.
I don't know his last name. It's A-N-E-S-H. And look up Giant. G-I-A-N-T.
Yeah, it's a problem.
But I mean, you know, the amazing thing was that once you saw how there was no question about
it. I have no idea. I'm not getting
into
the
present. I'm losing 100 euros.
No, you're not losing. I mean,
what's the application?
I think the fee is...
For instance, it's not so easy to see how you would find, how you would use this to say, to describe the tutorial, the tutorial. I mean...
You also want to do maps between the buildings, and
you
want to really...
You would
want
to, yeah, if you have C to D, I think those methods would work.
So
I would describe for you the maps between the buildings.
How do you explain the idea to describe maps between the buildings?
I think you could use this to get your map and
get it matched without having the first
one. Your guess is as good as mine. Yeah, but that's something I haven't checked very really.
I did something like when I was in Sydney,
so
like
I got
this summer.
Last summer. It
worked.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the
last case I have. The summer before last, I was in Sydney and I made a package for computing with much of their related varieties. And I
call me now.
So I can't wait, wait to represent them and compute maps between them and all this stuff. And that's sort of in a similar spirit. It's totally different. Like, I'm not computing explicitly with advisors, but it's very much a similar script.
So it's basically more recursive design
No, it's really dependent. I mean, it's not like we're made, it's just the same script. I could show it to you, but it's really useful for actual applications involving understanding how the V-Lane and subways intersect and stuff like that. I could just show it to you because it's totally done.
I'm sure this is much
but it's a totally different. No, it's a totally different.
Yeah.
It was part of the magma, it comes in magma, but it's it serves a totally different purpose than what you're doing. But it does very much match with the idea that you should think about training to do with Jacobians, not from the point of view of writing down explicit equations, but trying to work in some sort of homology sense.
Right. Yeah.
And this
I
is just like taking that to the extreme.
I mean,
mine was just
a bit
beyond the Jacobian thing.
It's a graphic interface for working with numbers. This is something that I saw talking about in Berlin.
So
you can see all these elements and ideals, power music represented, you just drag things around, you have this field diagram. It's much better than actually having to type something in the Perl.
You don't want to compete with CMOD level.
This is Sebastian Pauly and Anish Karve at Berlin. So it runs on top of the cache.
I think I had your dog over there.
It's designed to run on Mac OS and Windows.
You're going to just keep maps and intersections and little more because you really just need a torsion over QR. So what you do is instead.
Knowledge of algebraic semantics, categories, theory, etc. would be not you, not essential.
Let's
see if I can run the movie.
Ready for publications, but actually, I can send you the preprint or like a very, very rough thing.
Mime type quick time.
It's only one of the totally different problems. It's very much the same sort of thing that I've done.
Tower field.
And
then you can do various things with them.
Like
you have your power basis representative, the ideal You can actually drag one thing from the field to determine the relative, you know, things between them. It's built on top of cache. Supposedly, anything cache can do with memory. Interesting.
So that's that.
This is the Pauli Carve thing. Giantsystem.sourceforge.net.
So that's the number fields.
So here's the number field, power field. It's built on top of cache. So maybe algae can be. Do you still support algae?
It's just been absorbed into magma, I guess, all I
thought. Yeah. Files was talking about maybe doing something like this with magma. But then you do it for all types of structures in magma.
I guess it's a sort of image of a volcano exploding in these algae that gets covered by hot lava.
What was after that called algae, right?
Okay.
I just appended an M.
It's one of these things where you use one interpretation you might have.
Yeah, it's one of the more bizarre things. You don't know where something is in the magma source directory. You're probably an algae.
I've
not named anything normal.
But the
geometry
was
slash algae.
Was sort of
there's
a
lot of
finding
things that the geometry things
are. We need to
figure out where it is.
Yes.
Is it in curve L? Is it in curve?
But that's for the other one.
Tags for it, right?
Yeah. One.
Well, the one in terms of GT, you know, as per self ones.
You mean the one where you take functions divisors to pull it back to
the end. Right. So you should say extra F over that something is G to the end and you don't get G. Define D like that.
So we're working on D then. I guess, so we might suggest that's what we have to do.